Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math, see how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
One of my favorite guests, Jeff Lerner. He always has great ideas for how anybody, whether you're 19 years old or 70 years old, how you could start a multi-million dollar business. He's been on the podcast many times before, and I have a saying, and I learned this actually, gosh, I learned this in 1995 when one of my mentors at the time told me this. Your best new customers are your old customers. So at the time, my client for a business I had was HBO. I built their website and I was building many websites for them. So what does this technique mean? It means I go back to HBO and I say, hey, is there any other software services we could do for you other than just the website? And the answer is usually yes. And I've been applying the same strategy with the podcast, which is that I know which guests I enjoy the most combined with which guests generate the most interest from listeners. And I can see that from reviews and downloads and so on. And Jeff Lerner is a great guest on all these fronts. Basically, people need to figure out how to make more money in their lives. The average multimillionaire, as you've heard me say, has seven different streams of income, according to the IRS. And Jeff has a lot of ideas on how to get those different streams going. So here he is, Jeff Lerner, the master of entrepreneurship.
I've been waiting with bated breath, man.
Excellent. Well, Jeff, you've been on a couple times. You've been on three times before. This is your fourth time on the podcast. You teach entrepreneurship. You are an entrepreneur. Your entrepreneur students go on to great success. First, just real briefly, let's cover what types of businesses do you teach? That, and I've seen people go from zero to hero, and specifically zero to like million, million and a half, 2 million in revenues in their first year. And I'm not trying to sell you or anything. This is just, I have begged my kids to take your course and they don't listen to me. They don't do it. But just real briefly, describe the kind of business or businesses you teach people to do. Like I tell my neighbor's kids to do this. Like I think this is such a great way to do business, but just I'll let you describe it.
Sure. So what we try to do at Entra, which is my company, Entra Institute is our teaching portion of our company, is you know, really all things entrepreneurial. Where our mission statement is to empowering physical, personal, and professional excellence through entrepreneurial education, right? Like we're I believe that becoming more entrepreneurial is the, you know, the cure-all for both micro and macro challenges that the world faces and that we face in the world.
Yeah, like in the past year, 55 million people applied for unemployment. So clearly corporatism, which I define as differently than capitalism, corporatism has failed. And it's corporations are not as loyal as they led you to believe. And people have to literally choose themselves for success because no one else is going to choose them. So
choose yourself, folks. And there's a book by that title, right?
There is a book. I forgot who wrote it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But no, so what I do, you know, and we're a young company. We're only a couple years old and we're scaling and growing. And, you know, so there's a lot that we do now that we didn't even do 6 months ago. And there's an even more that we're going to do in a year or two that we don't do now. So I'm trying to like window, you know, moment in time, answer the question.
Well, give me like one business model and let's go through that real quickly. Right. Of like, what kind of business do some of your students do? Like,
so there's basically three things I think on the internet that you can generally describe as like, here are the established evergreen business models that are, you know, they have enough history and validity that they're not going to change in a year. And they are doable. They have that magical lifestyle flexibility component that you, as long as you have a laptop and some basic tools, you can go do them anywhere in the world, right? And we chunk those into being an affiliate marketer, which essentially means creating digital properties that allow you to put links in to sell other people's stuff and get paid referrals. There's being some sort of an agency or consultant even, where you provide either services or knowledge-based consulting to, you know, it's more of a B2B business model.
And let me ask you about that one, because this is one that I've recommended to a lot of people, which is go to pick a small mom and pop kind of industry, like go to a personal injury lawyer, like a law firm in your town that handles personal injuries, and take over their social media and tell them, you know, you'll increase their customers, do it for free for the first one. And this is all based on stuff you and I have spoken about. So you get testimonials and then start scaling. Go to other personal injury lawyers or law firms in other towns and other states and so on. And I think you mentioned one mom and pop couple one couple that is doing this, and they quickly got to millions in revenues doing personal injury lawyers or dentists or something like that.
Yeah. So it was, I guessing maybe you're talking about my friend up in New York who, focused on personal injury lawyers and, you know, has a 7-figure per year business. It's him and his wife.
And they do Instagram and...
They focus on Facebook mostly for both their own marketing. Facebook and a lot of SEO, like Google property stuff.
Yeah, so people don't even think that... why would a personal injury lawyer need social media? Well, people search on Google for personal injury lawyers or on Facebook for it, and the ones with the best content will pop up to the top.
Yeah, yeah, and the search engines, and it's not only the ones with the best content... when it's that the search engines are most likely to show you in the first place.
Yeah.
If you have the best content. So you reduce, you not only beat your competition, you reduce your competition by having
And Google will also show you people in your area. So you're not trying to rise up to the top of the country, but just the top of your town or county or state or whatever.
Yeah. And I mean, as an aside, late 2012, early 2013, I started doing what you just described. I actually started by calling plumbers and saying, hey, let me help you get more calls, you know, on the Google map, because I know those Yellow Pages ads aren't doing it for you anymore. And in, you know, 5.5 years, that grew to a business that serviced 11,000 small and medium-sized businesses in the U.S. and Canada. Like, to your point, that business did about $35 million in sales before I sold it. Like,
can I ask how much you sold it for?
About $2 million.
That's good.
Yeah.
Because it kind of ran itself, probably.
Yeah, I mean, and mostly what I was selling was the $250,000 a month MRR, the recurring revenue on people on subscriptions. And even then, I sold it for less than I could have because I was so ready to do what I'm doing now, which is start my education company. I basically sold it to the very first person that was interested.
That's great.
Yeah.
And what are some other I love these like mid-sized industries that are underserved by, you know, Silicon Valley.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah, here's a statistic for you, and I'll tell you where I got this statistic if people want to get it from the source. I had Brandon Dawson on my Millionaire Secrets show several months ago, and he is Grant Cardone's partner in Cardone Ventures. which is his business that buys, you know, essentially takes positions in small and medium sized kind of main street businesses. And he was, I don't remember the exact statistic, but it was something like 60% of all US GDP comes from a cluster of industries, which are small healthcare, which is like chiropractor, dentist, orthodontist, dermatologist, right? Not big hospital systems, but, you know, stuff that you can't access through the stock market, and home services, plumbers, roofers, electricians, carpet cleaners, pool cleaners, right? And those, and then within those categories, obviously there's so many subsets. And then you obviously have, you know, other professional service types like accountants and attorneys. And I mean, every one of these industries, you can become not even the category expert, but just a specialist, a competent specialist, and probably replace virtually any income that anybody with a job has, short of like Jamie Dimon or something.
It's so fascinating, and that it's so, but they're so unsexy that nobody thinks like, oh, you know, social media is going to help these people. Like, what would you do for plumbers that would get them more customers?
Oh my gosh. You know, I would give them social properties sufficient to generate what are called social signals, because social signals are what the pings that the search algorithms detect and go, okay, this plumber is more relevant and verifiable because they have, you know, Facebook is sending off this many signals and Twitter is sending off this many signals, and it triggers the algorithm. And then for those types of businesses, it's all about driving up their standing and placement in the map ecosystem. So on Google Map, if you can get them higher up on Google Map, ideally you can get them up into the top three of their locally relevant niche search. So like Birmingham, Alabama septic cleaning or something, right?
How do you get them? What do you mean get them higher up on Google Maps?
So Google Map is its own search engine, effectively. You take all the local businesses, which a local business in terms of how Google perceives it is a unique combination of a name, address, and phone number. And you could argue now that a website is a fourth required data point that provides any sort of commercial service, right? And essentially they have all of those whatever data points are organized in a directory structure, and they have it geo-organized by location. And that's its own searchable database that has its own search engine, which is the Google Map. And so when you search for a local business, it puts at the top of the search results page, or what's called a SERP, S-E-R-P, search engine results page. At the top of the SERP, it puts what's called the three-pack. And we've all seen this. It's the little thing on the search result that has a little mini map that you can click and zoom in on, and it has three recommended businesses in sequence under the map. Now, if you click on the map, it'll open up the maps interface and it'll have maybe 10 or 15 businesses, and then you can thumb through the pages and so forth. But if you can get to those top three where they don't have to click through to the maps interface to see you, you crack the code. You get all the marbles, right? You get like 80% of all the calls.
How do you take like a dentist and move them up on Google Maps on the search?
There's a few different things. And to be clear, I sold that agency in 2018. I'm not the expert that I was 2 or 3 years ago. But it involves social signals, which is why those social media properties are so important. And you're right. It's like people are like, well, nobody's going to choose a plumber because they posted a picture of taking their kids to the park on a Saturday afternoon. You're right. But somebody's going to choose a plumber because they found the plumber and they need a plumber. They're more likely to find the plumber because Google liked it when you posted a picture taking your kids to the park on a Saturday. And that gave you some, you know, incremental advantage in the algorithm. It's also what they call NAP consistency, name, address, and phone number consistency across all the other databases that list business information. Mm-hmm. So whether it's whitepages.com, Yellowbook, Yellowbot, Dex, City Search, Manta, Hot Frog, I own a directory called smallbusiness.info. There's like hundreds of these directories out there. Some of them are general business directories. Some of them are niche directories like, you know, 1-800-Flowers.com, for example, is actually a directory that has a back end of all these different florists and stuff. And so you clean up all your data, think of it as your footprint across the internet. You clean all that up and make sure that when Google scans all these data points, they find consistency and then they can get confidence. And 90% of why Google recommends a business is just because they're confident that they exist in the place and at the location and at the phone number that they think they exist at. Because that's all Google's looking for, is to not send a user to a bad phone number or a bad address so that the next time somebody wants a plumber, they're going to use Bing instead.
Well, I didn't even... Does Bing still exist?
I don't, Bing or Apple Maps or, you know, whatever. Yeah. Something other than... They just get mad at Google because they got a bad search result. That's... consistency is 90% of what Google cares about. And they don't even look at reviews. If you actually look at the listings of businesses, sometimes the top-ranked business has like 4.2 stars. And then you go to the map and there'll be some business on the second page that has like 5.0 stars. It's not rating.
That's interesting. I wonder if they do that on purpose because 5.0 stars, maybe they figure that's fake.
Well, for that, they look at the number of reviews. I mean, if somebody manages to fake a 5-star review across 300 different, you know, Google users, and Google's pretty smart about, you know,
distinct users,
bots and fake users, and you know, they know the demographics, and you know, they know if the user profile is connected to an email account that actually gets emails and responds to emails and has normal English dialogue, and like, they're pretty smart. And if somebody could beat the system at that level, I think Google's willing to let them win because they're so smart. But
and Instagram, would your agencies or your students' agencies do stuff with that? Like, what would you put up for like a dentist's Instagram?
Totally depends on the business category. Instagram is very qualitatively different in that a dentist's Instagram potentially could have very little to do with dentistry and very much to do with the dentist. It's like people want to go there to get to know the person and feel the person's energy and, you know, see the person's vibe. And like, Instagram's real touchy-feely. To be honest, it kind of annoys me, but you know, I can't beat him. I have to join him. But, you know, YouTube, for service trades where you're worried about the competence of the practitioner, YouTube,
that makes sense.
You get a dentist making some YouTube videos about, you know, what's a veneer? Like, how do you put in veneers? Who are veneers right for? How do veneers affix to the teeth? What happens to your real teeth when we put on veneers? Like, you could make a whole YouTube channel called, like, Veneers 101, and that dentist is going to dominate his market. Guarantee it.
Is there anything else? Like, should they buy YouTube ads? Or like, what can they do to kind of, if they're not getting the YouTube views they wanted to get?
Well, here's the thing. Do you need, I care about YouTube views because I sell online products and because I actually monetize my YouTube and I like the ad revenue. But does a dentist really care about YouTube views, or does he care about what YouTube is doing in his market for his positioning, his brand credibility, his reputation management, his pricing power? You know, if you're a dentist in a small town, you know, and you have six competitors and you suddenly you're known, and like, I'll use myself as an example. I live in a town with 200,000 people, and people know, man, there's this local guy who's like all over YouTube. This Jeff Lerner guy, right? I people stop me at the gym. They say hi to me at the gas stations now. And like, I'm like a little celebrity in this town, right? I say it all the time to my friends. I'm like, you know, you're lucky I'm not a real estate agent. I would own this town if I was a real estate agent, an attorney, an accountant, I feel like there's not virtually any trade that I couldn't dominate my market in, not because I know the trade the best, but because I know digital marketing the best.
Have you tried, because I've seen your YouTube ads, like, have you tried targeting locally and seeing if that's an effective way to target?
For me, it makes no difference. It wouldn't make sense to bother. Right. But I mean, with my agency, I've done enough local targeting for different types of businesses to know that it's strikingly powerful and strikingly affordable for most businesses.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And so that was the two business models, affiliate marketing and kind of these social media agencies. What's the third?
The third is the knowledge business. So like, and we were kind of talking about this when you came on my show last, the ability to monetize things that you know and are interested in is so much bigger than I think most people realize. And I think most people have a very narrow view of who can actually get paid for their competence. And, you know, we come from a model where, you know, Harvard has, or you know, let's pick a university, you know, your university has 50,000 students and 500 professors, right? And so the ratio of students to teachers is pretty low. On the internet, there's a big gap between those who know enough to teach and those who are actually willing to do the work of being in the knowledge business. And that right there makes it so that you're simply your willingness to put yourself out there, position, you know, claim some expertise and be like, hey, I'm Joe Piscopo and I'm an authority on this. Right there, you put yourself in a pretty elite group, because so many people on the internet are actually just scared to step up and be like, hey, I know a lot about a thing and I'd love to teach you. Mm-hmm. And then the knowledge business, the barrier to entry in the knowledge business is so much lower than people realize. And I'm not inviting people, you know, charlatanism to people to come in and say, talk about being authorities and things they don't know, but have a more fair assessment. Think about it. You didn't require that your math teacher in high school, you know, you didn't need to know that he was one of the 25 best algebra practitioners in the world in order to trust his, you know, Pythagorean theorem, or I guess that's geometry, but, you know,
failed math class.
Yeah, clearly that wasn't, there's a reason I do other things, but you don't need, the standard is not as high as people think, is my point.
Yeah, so here's the question I have for you, which is, and this is just the beginning, in the sense that we've talked about some of these business models before in great detail, and I've told people, I've described kind of specifically to some people over the past year, do this, this, and this, like this guy Jeff Lerner says, or listen to the podcast I had with him, or take his course. I've sent people to your course. Some of them took it, some of them didn't. But none of the people I've spoken with have actually taken one move towards starting a business. Like, I know one person, a very close person to me, who I begged her, just, you want to figure out how to make money, you want to pay your rent, just do, it's easy to just try starting this business. It'll take, just to experiment, to try. And she never did it. And she works the cash register at a paper retailer. And I'm not, that's her choice. This person's very close to me. I love her. But why don't people, is it me? Like, why don't people listen to my advice? Because these businesses, like if I was 20 years old or 25 or even 50 and I needed to start a business fast, I would totally do one of these business models. We've talked about them. Mm-hmm. I've seen them in your courses. I know about them. I've had experience with them. This is what I would do. Why don't people listen to me to do it?
Well, I'm glad somebody else out there experiences my daily frustration. This is the infinitely, you know, call it the $1 trillion question or whatever. I mean, what's the value of a fulfilled human life? Like, it's my endless vexation is like, and I've developed all this language and psychology and my own vernacular to tackle the exact question you're asking. Because I'm a purveyor of the information. I thought I was going to be in the business of just giving people the information on how to do this stuff. I very quickly realized that's not the business. The business is in helping people become the person that will do this stuff. And Entra, my company, I've realized, not by design, but certainly now by intent, is a personal development company that happens to teach entrepreneurial business models. Because getting people to the point where they, like you say, they have all the qualitative aspects of being an entrepreneur. They have the grit, they have the drive, they have the self-belief, they have the confidence, they have the ability to see a vision for their life that is different than the current vision of their life, and to work towards closing that gap consistently over time in the face of self-doubt and you know, maybe doubt of others and criticism of others, and like all those things that probably are very real in investing too. Although I think in some ways it's a more complex problem with starting a business because there's just, you know, more moving parts and probably more ways that the problem shows up.
Yeah, and you have to invest more time, and there's a little bit of reputation management when you're dealing with a customer.
Yeah, and customers. I mean, you got to take care of them. But the reality is most people, it's not taking care of customers that does them in. 99% of people, to your point, never get to the point of having a customer.
Yeah, I say to people, just go to the local dentist or the local eye doctor and say you'll do this for free for 2-3 months, take over all their social media, you know, take over Instagram, YouTube, and mm-hmm. their Facebook community page, not their personal page, but just their business page. And no harm, no foul, no good comes from it. But you see, if you double their customers or increase their customers, you don't even have to charge them. You just want a testimonial. And They don't even approach one person. I could go to my next door neighbor right now, who's an immigration lawyer, and I can say, let me just run your Instagram. He would say, of course, James, I'll let you run my Instagram. Now, I don't need to do it, but I could tell my kids to do it. They won't do it.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it is very challenging question. And, you know, I've come up with these models for ways of thinking about and trying to teach the answer to the question, or at least ways to see the question so people can answer it for themselves. I feel like some hybrid of a therapist, a psychologist, well, I guess those are often the same thing, a personal development guru, and to some degree a marketer now who has certain skills and he can talk about those skills. But trying to get people through that question is the hardest thing. And I've come up with some different models and ways of talking about it. One of them is I'm very quick to differentiate between the concept of man-made odds and what I call math-made odds, just because it's, you know, mnemonically
this is interesting.
Close. Man-made odds versus math-made odds. Math-made odds say, you know, whatever, 70 or 80% of all businesses fail in, you know, 5 years. And, but then if you go to like certain types of businesses, you know, it's like 99% of people that are not successful with their digital online business. And, you know, only 65% of brick and mortar or 35% of brick and mortar are successful. Like whatever, the odds are terrible. The odds are terrible for all of it. But, you know, great. So what compared to what? Like those are the math made odds. And if we're playing, if we're playing blackjack, well, then we have to be really, really concerned with the odds that are determined by the mathematical set of values that we're working with, right? The cards dictate the odds in blackjack. In life, you dictate the odds. They are man-made odds. You make your own odds. And it is a competition. I generally eschew living by comparison. You know, comparison is the thief of happiness. And I don't want to say, well, like, how am I doing compared to 100 other people? But the reality is when you enter a field that has its own finite economy and you want a chunk of that economy so that you can make a life doing the thing, you are now competing with everyone else in that economy and you have to get a big enough slice of the pie that it equals the size of your life or else you can't make a go of it. It's so easy to win those games. I say that, I don't say that to be cocky. I don't say that because I think that I have certain gifts other people don't have. I say it because most people, there's a great saying in one of my favorite books, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind by T. Harv Eker, which it's talking about rich and poor, or it's polls that it talks about, the difference between rich and poor, which, whether politically incorrect or not, it says, rich people play the money game to win. Poor people play the money game not to lose. Hmm. And I will say that about just about any game that you choose to play. Most people are playing not to lose. You go in and play to win, you're no longer competing with most people that are playing not to lose. There's a show on TV right now called Undercover Billionaire. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it. Is it good?
Yeah, I'm actually not, I watched the first episode and was like, oh, this is amazing. Plus I had Grant Cardone on my show and interviewed him. He's one of the participants right before it released. And so I was like all, you know, heated up to watch it. And now I'm forcing myself to wait until it's done so that I can binge watch it with my kids because I want them to see what hustle looks like.
What's the premise?
The premise is that you take three, not necessarily billionaires, but like really successful, you know, multi-million dollar business owner type people, and you drop them into towns where they have to change their names, assume new identities, and you drop them into a town where they've never been. They don't know anyone. They can't be who they are. You give them $100 and a car, and they have, I think, 90 days to make $1 million.
Oh man, I would totally want to go on this show.
I want to go on the show too, so bad. But my point is, when you watch Grant, and I've had other people telling me how it's going, and I saw the first episode, Grant Cardone is not walking around going, oh, well, statistically, this is highly improbable. He's making his own odds. He's like, okay, if I do this, 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 and this, I got a really damn good shot. And I happen to know that when I take action on something, it's at a whole different level than most people. And listen, Grant Cardone, he's not like this, you know, he's not like Bobby Fischer or Albert Einstein. He's like, he's just a super like kind of brash, scrappy dude. Yeah. And he's making his own odds. He is playing that game by man-made odds. And I don't have to see how it ends. I already know, that in 90 days or whatever happens, he's going to build something that most people would consider an incredible life for themselves.
And what do you think he'll
build? $100 in a beat up old truck in Pueblo, Colorado, where the median income is $21,000 and he doesn't know anyone.
Wow. So what do you, first off, how is he going to sleep the first night, do you think?
I don't know. But I mean, I think, well, what would I do? And to make sure I don't just drop the ball on your question, my point is, when you understand what the denominator of any odd set is, when the denominator is populated with human beings, and I don't mean to be like misanthropic here, but when you understand what a low standard that is, to say, well, the denominator is just other people, like, it's not that freaking hard. It's why you wrote the book, Skip the Line. Like, everybody can't skip the line. But as yeah. Oh, you don't, not everybody, that's the point. The
that's
line is
line.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody is the line.
Right.
Right? And you can step, most people won't even step out of the line, and skipping in a line is not a possibility unless stepping out of a line comes first. Most people are too scared to even step out of the line. So you're not competing with most people. That's my answer.
Right, and you make an interesting point too, which is that, okay, so first there's all the people who won't even try. Then there's the people who will try, but they're in a line too, of you know, they're probably doing, you know, if you do everything wrong in your business because maybe you never started a business before, or maybe you don't have the skills, different skill sets, you didn't learn them, or you didn't think it was important to learn them, or you didn't even know they existed, these skill sets, you're gonna fail as well. So there's lines, even it's like a fractal of lines. Like every step of the way, there's another line.
Exactly. And I do that. I walk people through an equation where I say, okay, let's do the man-made odds analysis of this situation. And you know, first we cut out 90% of the people that aren't even really trying. And then you have the 10%. And then we cut out 80% of those. It's usually an 80-20, you know, cut you make, right? And you only got to go through a couple cuts where 20% of 20% is 4%, and 20% of that is 0.8%, and 20% of that is 0.16%, right? Like now that's it. You only got to make that cut twice?
Yeah.
Three times? And there's always a way to make the cut. Like how many people are, you know, meditating in the morning so that their mind is as neuroplastic as possible before they start to learn? How many people are willing to make outbound phone calls as part of their process or whatever? That eliminates 80% of people that are scared of rejection. And how many, you know, right? It's like easy to whittle the odds down.
You know what I noticed too, is that people sometimes know that there's a list of things that businesses do, but then they do them in the wrong order. So like, you know, everybody I talk to, okay, I see your skill set, I see your passion, here's a business you could start. And the first thing that many people say to me as an example is, well, what if the trademark's taken? I'm like, well, don't think about it then.
So
don't
funny.
Even think about that for 1 second before you try to get a customer. And like, what if, I have to—
Oh, the domain name.
Yeah, the domain name. What if that's taken?
I can't get a good .com. Yeah,
maybe I'll start it later because I've got to do these other things right now. And
I don't have my license. Oh, trust me. I mean, I know the list.
Yeah, do you need a license?
I don't have my business licensing. I don't have my tax ID number. I don't.
Oh, yeah, that's a big
thing. I need to get QuickBooks.
But by the way, everyone is fooled into thinking you need to incorporate before starting your business. You don't really. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever incorporated once before actually having customers and making revenues. And then I would just switch it from my personal account to a business account months later when I finally would set up a corporation.
Yeah, I think there is something about, you know, for a lot of people, here's the thing, you and I, we don't need to do any of that crap. We just need to go out there, start gathering data and making an impact in the market. And then once we have proof of concept, we go, okay, let's treat this like a business. But there is a component for some people who've never treated something other than their job, they've never been a professional about something that wasn't their job.
Right.
There is a thing about being a professional and starting with the intention, you know? And so psychologically, it can be powerful to make micro commitments like setting up a bank account and incorporating and, you know, beginning with the doing things that only make sense if you're actually going to make money.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, I, of course, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX is track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long, and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you could try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Okay, so now what are you seeing in the landscape? Like what's changing? What's, you know, are people being successful starting these businesses? What's happened? You know, what are the opportunities post pandemic now? We haven't spoken about, you know, new opportunities mm-hmm. since before the pandemic.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I was actually telling my wife today, we were driving home we went to Vegas and we had about 1.5 hours in the car. And I was telling her, I was like, it's so exciting. I've been doing Entre for 2 years. We started selling training just about 22 months ago, right? So it's not a long time frame to evaluate. And you know, the first day we sold 3 courses, right? Now we sell 300-400 a day, right? So it's like 80% of the people I have as a sample group have come in like the last 6 or 8 months since we've really blown up. So I'm just now getting to see a lot of results that people are getting because we're not the BS guys on the internet that are promising you some 90-day microwave result. It takes time. And, you know, we had a lady post in the group this morning. She said, okay, I need to post. I've been holding off on posting about my results, but I've made at least one sale every single day now for 40 consecutive days.
Wow.
So I'm posting about it, right? Like this is my first celebration post. And I'm starting to see these things happen. And, you know, the reality is it does take time. That's why most people don't stay with it long enough. You know,
what's she selling? Can I ask?
I actually don't even know. I know she lives in Costa Rica. You know, she's a great illustration of my point. You can do this from anywhere in the world. She basically lives on a beach in Costa Rica. And she's selling products primarily to US audience. And, you know, as far as what we're seeing, and that's just one example. I mean, what we're seeing is, and it's not like, we shouldn't be surprised by this. It's like, it works. That's what we're seeing. It works. People are getting results. They're making money. They're changing their life. They're changing their lifestyle and they're changing their belief set. It just works. I don't know. And it works. It works now. It worked well before the pandemic. It works great now. It worked during the pandemic. Like it's not even that it's like a response to the pandemic. It's just that it's like pandemic neutral, like pandemic had zero impact online. I mean, yeah, you could say it actually drove more people online, but it also drove more merchants online.
Yeah.
So, but the net, so, right, net
so
is
social
it's
media
like,
agencies became important. Affiliate marketing became more mm-hmm. important. Knowledge,
but the internet's
online
great.
Knowledge became more important.
And I don't know, to your point, I don't know why everybody in the world isn't saying, okay, what's the single, there's probably only 2 things that could change people's quality of life on we'll call it like the top tier type of change. For some people, it would be like solving a health challenge, right? Like dropping weight or curing their diabetes or something. And right along with that would be changing the way they make money.
Yeah.
To something more flexible. And I don't know why everybody in the world isn't obsessed with what I teach, but you know, maybe that's because I'm not doing my job well enough.
But I think you're right though. I think a lot of people feel they can't do something or they need to have something established and then they'll do it. But the problem is the establishment knows this. The establishment always only pays enough so that you're working super hard and then you're tired and then you sleep and then you wake up and go back. You have to go back to that job. There's no mm-hmm. extra time. So you have to really fight hard to find the time. Like you have to give up something to find the time, you know, to make that first step. And so that's really important.
Yeah, I agree. And again, it's, you know, this is the endless frustration of my life is that anybody can, but everybody won't. But I just think that you have to change. Oh, there's so many different pieces to it. So much of it is environmental. I mean, you know, as a let's call it a doctor who writes prescriptions for people that want to, that say they want to change their life. Like they come into my office and they're like, well, doc, I got a pain over here in my, you know, I missed my kid's little league game and I don't want that pain anymore, right? How do I change things so that I don't have to ask my boss to go home early to see my kid's game? I'm right. I write the prescription, like you're saying, of like, well, start an agency or become an affiliate, you know, start a blog and post affiliate links or whatever. It's environment. Environment is the single biggest thing I have found that makes is the right prescription for most people. You have got to dramatically change your environment. And that's where, as a social species, as a species that is fundamentally tribal in our origin, and we relied on social networks for so long just to survive, and getting cast out of the village was even worse than death, it's so hard for people to change their environments. They need to cut off their negative friends. They need to, you know, move out of their parents' house. They need to, sometimes they need to get a damn divorce. Like, changing your environmental stimuli is the number one thing that most people need to do, and it's the number one thing that most people resist, in my experience.
Yeah, I remember one time some friends of mine pitched me and my business partner on a business idea, and it sounded really exciting. It was all, you know, fast paced. We're going to make a lot of money. But then I was talking to my partner afterwards and I was saying, you know, are these people the winners of the world? Like, we've seen them lose time after time after time. Or is it really now their magic time that we should absolutely follow them? Cause we had followed them in the past and it never worked out.
Right.
And, you know, and I think it's important to think like that. Like you really are the average of the five people you spend your time around. And that's a truism. It's a cliche and a truism, as most cliches are. Mm-hmm. And it's important to know. Now, I mean, what, you know, right now you teach these courses. I know you've built some software to help facilitate some of these agencies or affiliate marketing programs. Just what to make it even easier for these people to start mm-hmm. their businesses. But like, what I don't know specifically what the software is.
Yeah, I'll talk about that. And even before I talk about it, I'm going to actually undercut myself in terms of the conversation, because I'd love to say that, oh man, I built this software and it is solving every problem, and like anybody that wants a hole needs to buy my drill. But actually, I sometimes think that the more shortcuts and wonderful tools we build, we meaning just the, you know, the entrepreneurs of the world that solve problems, the we deflate success rather than create. Because look, I crushed it out of the gate, man. When I went online in 2008, I was a beast. I was almost $500,000 in debt. I was overweight. I was depressed. I was going through a divorce. I had just gotten evicted from my apartment. Only because my soon to be ex-wife's parents were nice enough to let me live in their spare bedroom on the condition that I never entered her bedroom where she was going to live. Like that was my situation. And I went online to figure out how to make money online. And I didn't have a funnel builder software. I didn't have, you know, AI that'll generate pre-written emails for me based on topic and intent. Like I didn't have any of this crap. I had to buy HTML for dummies at the bookstore and teach myself to, you know, create a landing page in Adobe Dreamweaver. And I slayed it, man. I paid off $500,000 in debt in 18 months. Like, and so I think now the easier we make it, you know, it's kind of like selling all these BS weight loss hacks on the internet. We're not helping people lose weight. We're helping people get fat, because they're starting to dissociate the result from the challenge or the difficulty. And
meaning they think it's eventually going to be so easy to lose weight losing one of these products, so they might as well just eat more now, and then later on they forget to use the products. Or
that's part of it. It's okay to compound the problem right now because the solution is easy and accessible whenever I'm ready for it. And also, we're externalizing the focus of the solution, where the solution becomes the magic software, the magic bullet, the magic bottle of pills, instead of the solution being grit, bloody knuckles, sweat on the brow, and just doing the damn work that most people are not willing to do. Like, and you know, that's a cultural commentary. All that said, I built some amazing software that is going to solve a lot of people's problems when they go start a digital business, and it's called Entresoft. software for entrepreneurs, right? ENTRESOFT. We built this amazing software to solve problems. And my intent is I want to remove every excuse possible. Not because I think, here's the caveat, not because I think that's actually going to increase success. I actually don't. If I'm being my cynical, honest self, I think we can eliminate all the mechanical excuses in the world and we wouldn't statistically change success outcomes one bit. But what we would do is we would eliminate plausible excuses and force people to have more honest conversations with themselves. And if I can accomplish that, at least I've done something most people didn't.
So how will it help entrepreneurs, the software?
It'll eliminate most of your technical excuses to force you to realize if you're not getting success, it's because of you, not the platform. B, it will, for the person who is ready to succeed and do the work, it'll move you so much further, so much faster.
Like, what does it do? Like, what's the functionality?
So it's you know, start thinking of it as like a funnel builder. Like, okay, I wrote a book and now I want to sell it, right? And I don't want to, you know, hope that Barnes & Noble picks me up. I want to take some control. Okay. So I build a landing page that says, hey, you know, opt in here to be on my list and, you know, for my pre-launch or to get advance notice when I release the rest of the book, I'm going to publish the first three chapters. I don't know. Sorry, that's a horrible offer. But you make some page with a thing that people can opt in to get. And then you connect that page to a page that delivers the thing that they opted in for and tells them about more that they can get, right? And then the next page has a shopping cart where it's like, okay, if you want the thing, click the button and it loads up and they transact and it integrates a merchant account and you can collect money and it triggers an email. So they get a receipt and they get added to a list so that when the book does come out, you can send them a notification and like all the mechanical moving technical parts of a digital business or of the digital face even of a brick and mortar business, they have been things that we've been trying to systematically reduce barriers to so that more businesses can access them because they're basically essential in the modern age. So that's part of what it does. But then it has a lot of really, really intelligent tools on the side of like messaging and multi-channel conversation. So you want to have somebody put their email in on that page and maybe capture a phone number and you want them to get a text message if they do a certain thing and you want them to get an email if they do a different thing and you want them to so it does that. Let's say somebody hires you to build them a website and you want to be able to duplicate your own website and then make changes starting from there, all of inside of one system, you can do that. Let's say you really like somebody else's site and they're like, oh, well, you should copy my site. And they can create a snapshot that you can import into our system and auto-generate a pre-done website. So we can provide them 50 websites, 50 snapshots that they can just load up for any type of business they could possibly want. Like it does so much. I don't want to turn this into an infomercial.
But let's say I wanted to start a social media agency. Mm-hmm. And let's say I start off with, so I put up some ad or somehow people want me to manage their Instagram account. And they go through, they see the landing page, I'll manage your Instagram account. If you don't get double your customers in a month, no pay. You don't have to pay. And so they opt in and think, yeah, sure, I'll let you do this and double my customers. And then they sign up, they get an email, and then is it easy to put in an upsell? Like if you'd also want me to manage your YouTube channel, click here to find out more.
If you'd like to add 12 months for
X dollars, like a discount, then
totally. Yeah, so you can even use it for like delivery of digital products. So it's like, hey, if you want to click here to get my free, ebook and accompanying video series on how to grow a successful YouTube channel, add that to the cart, and when you check out, and it'll automatically, create a coded copy of, let's say, the PDF, so that it emails it to them, and when they open the email and they open the PDF, you know that they got it knows it was them that opened it. You know they accessed the product, and if they try to say I never got the product, you can be like, well, actually, you opened it yesterday afternoon. So, it's just all kinds of fancy stuff.
Yeah, that's great because I didn't even really fully understand what a funnel was until just now. So even though I've worked with them before 1,000 times before, but it's basically you have a landing page with an offer. And if you don't accept the offer, maybe there's a downsell. Like, I noticed you didn't do this. Would you like to at least be on my email list or something like that?
Right.
And then, or if you buy the product, there's an upsell. Like, hey, if you would like a year for only 50%, there's this. And then there might even be an upsell from that. Like, hey, if you want a lifetime, it's this. And then it's also keeping track of all the emails. And then Okay, here's another example. I know someone who sells paintings that she does. And, you know, if someone buys a painting and there's, you know, she has a landing page, an Instagram site. And if someone wants to buy a painting, they go in. Obviously, their email address is put on a list and so on. But there could be an upsell. Hey, if you want me to do a portrait of you, you know, I offer that. So that's an upsell. Or mm-hmm. if you want notifications of the next of when I put these artworks on clothing, you know, click here and put your phone number and I'll text you so you can buy right, you know, before I run yep. out. And so it does all of this.
Does all of it. Yeah. And let's say you actually, you know, then you got to ship them the order, right? So they buy and it's got to post. Let's say you use a print on demand house. Let's say they bought a t-shirt, right? And you need to post a notification, whether it sends an email notification or it injects a script or it uploads a file via FTP. Like what you got to let the fulfillment house know, hey, we got an order to fulfill, right? It can do that too. It's just.
How long did it take you to build the software? Did you have a bunch of programmers?
Yeah. So we actually started with a software that was basically built primarily for agencies. So it had some native functionality. We got our own iteration of the code and the license to do whatever we wanted with it in perpetuity, right? And then we've built just a bunch of additional functionality on top of it to account for a lot of different use cases that we know and that we teach. Because we do teach a variety of different business models and we know the issues that people in those different businesses face. And so we built I think that's one of the things that really differentiates our software is that we're business model agnostic. We're not like trying to make everyone into affiliate marketers. We're not trying to tell everyone to create a course.
Well, we just described examples of one's an artist, the other was, I even forget what it was, but it was completely different.
Yeah. A social media marketing agency, I'd say. Right. And we built it but how, as entrepreneurs that have done these things. I mean, I've done all of those things I just described. You know, I built the software I basically wish I'd always had.
So you might end up being, a software company rather than an educational company.
Between you and me, behind closed doors, which I'm now opening on your show,
We're not going to tell anyone. No one's listening.
Thank you. We already are. We say that all the time. We're building a software. I mean, I say all the time. I mean, we literally beta launched the software a week ago to a private group internally. We're launching it next week to a larger group of our members, about 10,000 of our members. The month after that, we're launching it to a larger part of our list, which is about 100,000 students. And then, you know, probably Q3, we'll be doing big, grand, public, look at me launch. And, but even already after week one of the 50-person beta test, we're already describing ourselves internally as, hey, we're a software company that uses education as a, not as a loss leader, but as an acquisition.
You know, it's so interesting. By the way, this meta model of building a business, which I'll about to describe, is very valuable. So I've seen a lot of businesses, and this is a fatal mistake I made in the 90s, not understanding the model that you're kind of describing. So a lot of good businesses start out as an agency and, you know, they perform some service for a client. Like in your case, you're teaching clients entrepreneurship and helping them set up their businesses. And that you've done it in a scalable way because online courses and stuff like that are scalable. But then even more scalable is to productize what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So if you're teaching, well, you need to build this funnel, and then you need to build this, and you need to build this, and you need to build this, and here's all the software doing. But now you're selling the products to actually do it. That's productizing what you've been teaching. So like I there's this company, Buddy Media, that is always a classic example for me. They knew that in 2007, Facebook was going to be big for corporations, just like the web eventually was. And so they started selling, you know, corporations, first teaching corporations what Facebook is and how to use it, then selling, essentially they were like an advertising agency or a Facebook agency helping companies like Pepsi or whatever, Fortune 500 companies, get on Facebook and maximize. But it was like a client, it was like a agency client relationship, like they would personally handle the client. And then they saw that most of their clients were commonly doing like polls and these games and like these formats. So they created, you know, basically menus became menu driven, and all these things they automated. Like, okay, you want a poll on your site, you want this game on your site, you want this, fill out these forms and it's done. And they went from being, you know, raising money at like a $30 million valuation to switching to a software company and then selling for $800 million to Salesforce.com, which is the premier software as a service company. And so that is the model. You manually do stuff until you see what works and what doesn't, and boom, you automate it and you're done. And I think too many businesses try to do it in reverse. They try to automate what they think is going to be useful, but you don't know until you do it 1,000 times what's going to be useful.
Yeah, you're so right. We've taken a very deliberate approach, and I think a lot of people just try to rush, and I'm glad they do, because it means, it's like we were talking about earlier about man-made odds versus math-made odds. Like the math-made odds of saying, hey, I'm going to launch a unicorn software company are very small. But again, who's in that denominator, right? The man-made odds to say, okay, you know what? I'm going to take 3 years. I mean, I'm going to describe to you very quickly now my life for the last 3 years. I'm going to take 3 years and I'm going to launch, you know, $1 billion software company, right? Or let's say I'm going to take 5 years because it hasn't happened yet. I'm going to start and I'm going to do it on a budget of $20,000 and I'm not going to raise any money. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to start driving around in my car with my phone, with my cell phone right here. And I'm going to start shooting videos of myself talking about things I know to the world and saying, hey, I'd love to help. Here's some free value. I'm going to do that for a year. And once I have a lot of people listening and at least knowing that my heart's in the right place because I'm giving stuff away, I'm not asking for anything, then I'm going to create a course and I'm going to start actually selling some education. And then I'm going to take 2 weeks, build a course. I'll edit it myself. It'll be pretty lo-fi, low-tech, right? I locked myself in a hotel room and just came out when the course was done. And I'm going to start selling it. And I sold, you know, $300 of my course on day one. But that's okay because 18, 20 months later, I'm going to have, you know, let's say $50 to $60 million plus a year run rate business, right? Just selling education. And I've built a list of a couple million people. I've built a social following of hundreds of thousands and millions more who at least see my stuff. And I've got, you know, I can afford developers and I can do all this stuff. And I've got, you know, a ton of data now about what people are into, what people are learning, what people are doing, what problems people are having. I have a database of support tickets I can comb through to say, okay, what's every problem I could conceivably try to solve with a piece of technology? Then I'm going to create my own software and I'm going to come out of the gate as a software company. The reason most software companies have to go raise money is because it costs more to acquire a software customer typically than they make back in even the first 6 or 12 months of having them as a customer. Right. And that's assuming the software works and doesn't blow up in their face, right? And software is notoriously buggy. But that's okay because I actually already have a business. It's acquiring, you know, 10 to 20,000 paid customers a month with education that all need some software that does roughly what my software does. And then I'm going to use all that critical mass to launch my software and try to go from zero to, let's say, $1 million a month MRR with my software in 3 to 6 months, and 2 to 3 years from now, have a $1 billion software company that never needed to raise any money. That's cool. I'm just going to do that. I'm going to do that instead of starting with the assumption that launching a software company is hard and I shouldn't do it. And that's what I did.
Yeah. And it seems I've invested in a lot of software companies. It seems to me you're on a good track here. So,
and that's what I mean about man-made odds versus math-made odds. If I had asked anybody 3 years ago what they thought of my idea of launching a software company, do you think one person who cared about me would have said it was a good idea?
You know, I might not have even have said it was a good idea. Like hearing you describe it after you've done it, you know, in terms of making the software, it definitely sounds like a great idea. I want to tell you I want to invest. But if you had just told me that, I would have said, hey, Jeff, you're doing fine with the selling the online courses and there's already software to do each component of what you're describing.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm going to sell my agency. I'm going to fire sale my agency to get out of it, to create the time to do all that. Bear in mind, I cut off my $30,000 to $50,000 a month personal income stream so that I could do this.
Yeah. See, it's fascinating because I probably would have been one of the naysayers. I probably would have told you, hey man, you can't skip the line on software business.
Yeah. Right.
But you know, and you're doing fine with this other business. So what are you doing? But it makes total sense. And if you know you're solving problems and you have the people you've taught to basically kickstart selling the software, you know, they're going to certainly use your software if they've already running a successful business because of you. So you've got a built-in, you know, first customer base, and then word of mouth will, and advertising will take you. Yeah. Advertising with all the principles of marketing and social proof and authority and testimonials and mm-hmm. all that stuff. It's going to be a massive success. And again, all of these things, and I forget if we talked about it here or on your podcast, but it's people need to have a mindset not only of I can do this, but every time they succeed at one thing, they should say, I can scale this. So what's the next step up to scale this?
Yeah.
Like, do I franchise the model? Do I create software to automate the model? Do I expand? Like, okay, I taught entrepreneurship. Now do I teach, physical fitness? Like, what are the ways to expand horizontally and vertically? And they should mm-hmm. always challenge themselves that way. And that should always be the next step up the mountain. Because that's how you create a billion-dollar software business. Is it's always the next thing to scale.
Always, always. Yeah, and yeah, I'm glad you said vertical and horizontal. You know, this concept of vertical integration is so powerful. And for, you know, once you create the minimum viable customer acquisition model, you should be thinking, okay, what else can I sell that doesn't cost additionally to acquire new customers? And then horizontally, you should be thinking, okay, what can I, and horizontal, I think, comes later. But, you know, for us, the horizontal expansion is say, okay, because actually, if you think about my business model, all I'm doing is reaching the, you know, and it's a huge market, millions and millions of people that are like, okay, I have a job, I still need to make money, but I want more freedom. So I say, okay, well, become, you know, learn these skills and you can, you know, potentially become an entrepreneur, or at least create different opportunities for yourself. Even, you know, it's not that everybody has to start a business or become an entrepreneur, but you do have to change how you get paid in the world. Maybe you need to become a freelancer. Maybe you need to get self-employed. Maybe you need to start a side hustle while you keep your job. Like, you have to, you know, whatever, change that part of your life. So I have millions of people doing that. But what about all the people that are already in trades where they're doing that? What about all the real estate agents? What about all the insurance brokers? What about all the, you know, even chiropractors? What about all the, you know, self-employed freelance service type of people out there who also need to learn these skills? So I can start bringing in category experts, and, you know, there's real estate agents. Like, I know a lady who does, you know, I think at the peak of her career, she was doing $20 million a year in real estate commissions or something. I mean, something just next level. You know, what if she teaches a course to take all those 3 million real estate agents in this country and not try to turn them into digital marketers? Just turn them into successful realtors, because 2.99 million of them are not, because that's an industry with horrible math-made odds. And I can start taking on these different industries. And, you know, you look at that horizontally, and then you look vertically going with software. How big can Entre get? Like, I don't know. It's actually pointless to speculate. It's more fun to just put my head down and do the work. But all of this, because 3 years ago, I was smart enough not to ask anybody's advice. And to the extent that they gave it to me anyways, I was smart enough to ignore it. And that, if anything, I want people listening to this show, it's not like I'm saying, well, go compete with me and do what I'm doing. But trust me, that's not what I'm saying. But go improve your life by doing your version of what I've done, which is all possible when you actually believe in yourself.
Yeah, it's so interesting. You've given me so many ideas to tell my friends about what they should be doing. So this was great. And Jeff, you're always a friend and a friend of the podcast. You should come on more often. Like, I love talking about entrepreneurship, because here's the thing. People are suffering right now. Like, they really are. They don't know what to do and they're scared. Everyone says, for instance, oh, you know, LA will get back to normal. New York City will get back to normal now that we have a vaccine. What about the million people who might have lost their jobs or left or been laid off or gave up or never started when they were going to start, and now they're afraid because what if there's a shutdown again? People need to know, people need someone to tell them it's okay and that they're going to be okay, and just try these different ideas and try them in as least expensive as a way possible, and here's help. And you're not going to find satisfaction going the traditional route. That just doesn't work anymore. And maybe it never worked, but it definitely doesn't work now. And I think, you know, companies like yours and people like you are helping these people. So I'm grateful you're on the show, you know, helping my listeners.
I love it. And I love coming on your show. We need to do it many more times. I will say the other thing about, I think what people have experienced in the last, let's, you know, a little over a year now, we went through a, and I'm actually a little bit, this is going to sound really dark to say, I'm actually a little bit disappointed that things are resolving themselves with relative, I don't know, it's happening, let's say, and there is a sense of like, oh, things are going to get better. Because you know what like pisses me off is we went through a period of a year, like the zeitgeist of 2020 is whoever expressed the most fear and indignation got the airtime.
It's true. Like in the beginning of the whole pandemic, they were saying, I remember, I think it was the New York Times. I don't want to say incorrectly. But I think it was, might not have been. One article I read said there's going to be 140 million deaths around the world.
Right.
They assumed all 7 billion people would get COVID and that there was a 2% fatality rate. So 140 million deaths. And so I had to go on the podcast and explain what pandemic math was. And people wrote me lots of emails thanking me for explaining that. Like everyone was terrified and terror sort of ruled the world. Yeah. And then again, I felt people were in denial over some of the realities, like lots of restaurants and businesses and so on were going out of business. That was the issues that really needed to be confronted. But people were in denial of those, but too accepting of the virus data. So just staying at home and frozen and waiting. Mm-hmm. And then scared about money, like food lines in New York City were like two blocks deep. And so, you know, hopefully now some of these problems will get solved. But I think people have to take it on to themselves to solve their financial problems now and not just hope for jobs to open for a little while and then close and then open and so on. Like, and I think I strongly encourage people to listen to this advice and do something.
Amen. But I just echo everything you said. And I hope that if there's ever a round two, we'll go, you know, round one really sucked, man. There was a lot of fear and a lot of misery in the world. And the virus went away long before the misery did, because there's a lot of people whose lives are permanently affected. Next time we go through something as a species like this, let's maybe let the people who have empowering messages have the mic and who are being proactive and entrepreneurial in the way they approach these problems. Maybe let's let them be in charge the next time.
That's such a good point. And the key word there too is species. Like we had this real opportunity, and I spoke about this on the podcast basically pretty much a year ago today. This is the first thing in our lives we were going through as a species, like every corner of the earth. Not even World War II or World War I really was the whole world. This was the whole world, like every continent, every country, and so on. And I feel like we blew this opportunity to really bond even a tiny bit closer. I think it drove us apart. And because of politics in America, actually, no matter what side you're on, I think politics and media drove us apart to a large extent. And hopefully, you know, the next time we have an opportunity like this, we really use it to change the world. And unfortunately, this time, I don't think it happened.
No, I don't either. Not in any change for the better sense. But that's a big conversation I'd love to have sometime.
Excellent. Well, Jeff Lerner, I can't wait for your software to come out. I might get it, even though right now I might not have a use for it, but I'll figure out a use for it. And let's reconvene soon, because we always have like great conversations. I still point people to the podcast about you describing, and this was, we did on the fly, we turned a conversation into a podcast about how to become, you dropped out of school, high school, to become a professional jazz piano player, and you described that, and I just thought that was a wonderful story and a great podcast. It's one of my all-time favorites, and so thanks once again for being a regular on the podcast.
Yeah, I honestly skipped the line, and I did
it. You did.
And at that time, I wasn't smart enough not to ask people's input, and everybody told me I couldn't.
Yeah, thank God you didn't listen to them. And that kind of set the model for everything you did since then too. Mm-hmm. That's what people don't understand, is that sometimes you could do something that doesn't seem, oh, you're never gonna be a billionaire being a jazz piano player. Well, A, there's a chance they might be wrong. Again, man-made odds versus math-made odds. But B, it created a mindset in you that you know you can do something that seems impossible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that nobody else is doing. So I'll leave it with that. This is do the impossible. Thanks once again, Jeff.
Of course. Thank you, James.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.